Welcome to the Chain Stories Podcast, the podcast that celebrates disruptors who defy convention. Here, we dive into the bold stories of trailblazers who turned audacious ideas into billion-dollar ventures. From digital assets to transformative innovations, brought to you by Dropout Capital, we believe the path to success isn't always conventional. So whether you're a student, a founder, or just curious, these are the stories of fearless innovators redefining what's possible.
Hey everyone, today we have Mihai from Pay by Face. How are you doing today, Mihai?
I'm doing great, Tony. Thanks for inviting me to the podcast.
Great, great. So I was super stoked to hear about what you're doing with Pay by Face. It's a vision that for a while when I lived in actually Texas and across the US, I saw this being implemented in certain places, but it was still very early days. And when I saw your idea, it was, well, someone is actually building this. How convenient. And is it even possible to do this? So first and foremost, I'd like to know, how did you get started with this idea? Were you in college at the time? Is it your first startup?
No, not my first startup at all. So I'm actually 45. You can see the gray. I've been through the reins of entrepreneurship. I've been doing startups for over 20 years. I started in the dot-com bubble and I studied abroad. And on the plane ride back to Texas, I was sending resumes. And when I landed, I had a job and got started in tech and help desk. And this was late 90s. And just got into web development. And then I just started coming up with ideas left and right. Like, we built a MySpace before MySpace. It was called NetColony. We built online dating sites in the early 2000s, all kinds of stuff. So I don't even remember how many startups I've built. I've lost track in so many different domains. And then went through this company that hired me, started learning servers and programming in ASP Classic, Access Database. There wasn't even any cloud. Like, there was no cloud. And we were building our own cloud in the basement. So it's been quite a journey. And long story short, I traveled the world. We were doing all kinds of cool stuff. Even when Caller ID started, we were using Caller ID to do text. And we had a VoIP trunk line coming into our house and just playing way ahead of our time with a lot of different tech and just launching all kinds of stuff. I had a BlackBerry when the BlackBerry came out. We were pioneers in a lot of tech and first ones to experience a lot of this stuff. And so our ideas were just like a Christmas tree. And then I stuck because we were just with our high school buddies and college buddies doing these things, and pretty much profit was being partied away. So it wasn't very scalable in that regard. And after that in Texas, then I moved to Seattle. And that's when it really started solidifying that we want to turn our ideas into a real company, a real business. And we started in digital signage in like Clear Channel did in the States, but we were buying TVs at Best Buy on our parents' credit card and putting up all over Seattle and California and doing digital advertising and like face recognition and captive audience and all that stuff before anybody even knew what the hell that was. So it was quite a fun playground. Like, I built the first dispatch taxi in Seattle right when Uber launched on iPhone 3GS. We had our own device, like a Windows ME device that we had installed in taxis with clear wire internet in Seattle, doing basically Uber. Before Uber started. So we did all kinds of really fun projects. And then I started getting to the corporate world, knowing iPhone development very early on. At one point, I had 18 different games I programmed on iPhone. I had laser tag, augment reality in the App Store, and iJoust. Remember the little birds and the eggs and Joust? Yeah. Built iJoust on iPhone.
That's pretty cool.
And then years passed by. And just to jump to the Pay by Face story, I ended up living on a mountain on a sailboat. I had burnt out on tech. We had done so many things. And I was like, I'm just going to go plant some grapes and make wine. You know, like, that's about it.
Your exits before you did that, or it was just spontaneously doing it on a budget?
Yeah, it was just spontaneous. I found some property in Seattle, and I was so burnt out on tech. I just decided to, let's just go out and play in the dirt. So tired of being behind a laptop. But I had my mom. So I was born in Romania, actually, and we moved to the States when I was 5. So it had been a long time, like 25 years since I had been back to Romania. I'm in Bucharest right now. And my mom was just like, hey, why don't you go back to Romania? Go see your grandma. Go eat some good food or whatever. And so I got on a plane and I came to Bucharest about, almost 8-9 years ago. This was like at the end of 2018, 2019. And I came back to Bucharest, and within 5 days, I realized this is the new Wild West in Europe, Eastern Europe at that time. And open banking and the idea of changing the landscape of payments was just barely starting to be in discussions among VC groups out here. And I realized that with my experience, never played in fintech. There wasn't even the word fintech back then. It was just like, try to build some cool new payment app. And I was at a restaurant in Bucharest, and the waitress came out after I had my coffee, and she was like, how would you like to pay, cash or card? And in the States, nobody asks you that. You just pay and you go. And so my engineering brain was like, what do you mean, how do I pay? Like, why don't I just pay with my face? Why does that matter? And then I thought, I was like, wait, I could build that. And that's how it tangibly turned into, I can do this. Let's try it. There'd been other discussions about an idea of this sort. But that's when it really clicked. And I was like, oh, I can do this. And so this was, you can imagine, this was like in the 2019 pre-pandemic. So we didn't know what was right around the corner. And so I just started building a prototype. And I had this really clunky Android device that I tested it to see if it recognized me. And I had dabbled in face recognition, but it was still very infant tech. And it worked. But then it was like, okay, can I tie my face to a bank card, like a debit card or something, and tokenize the card and do some sort of e-commerce transaction and behind the scenes? And it took a while. It took almost a year to figure out how to connect into a payment gateway and do that whole e-commerce thing, because it was still pretty new. Even the gateways weren't fully baked. So we came up with an actual working demo, launched a coffee shop in Bucharest right at the end, like somewhere in 2019. And then we got accepted in Startup Bootcamp Accelerator in Amsterdam. And me and my wife and my one-year-old at the time, we got in our car and we drove from Bucharest to Amsterdam to participate in Startup Bootcamp. And then just within a month or so, COVID hit Europe and we were stuck in our apartment. So it's okay. We have this really cool idea and we got to figure out how we're going to pay with our face in the middle of COVID locked in our apartment. That's a challenge.
Very big challenge. So that probably slowed down the whole process that you had envisioned and planned out for the startup.
It did, but it also put us in the pressure cooker, right? So we really had to squeeze something out. And it was interesting because in COVID, locked in our apartments, nobody wanted to open the door. Nobody wanted to interact with people. And so we figured maybe this is actually good because, of course, you can't touch anything. So maybe this is just right for us. And we came up with a way to use Pay by Face for delivery. The, you know, pizza guy or Glovo guy came by to the door, he could scan our face through the window. We didn't have to open the door and approve the transaction through the window and make a payment and then open the door when the guy left. So the pitch was actually really cool and it made a lot of sense. And at that point, we realized maybe this is a fad, maybe this is trend, but we can run with this. And the rest is history. In the last 7-8 years, it's been quite a ride.
So going back to that moment when people could pay by face just through scanning via their window, before it was just, it's with a code, right? We have to show our code to the driver or yell it out loud. But this, it just allows us to scan and know that's the right person to deliver.
Correct. Yeah. So you had authentication, authorization, payment, the entire life cycle of a transaction, typical e-commerce transaction in within a few seconds.
Well, fascinating. And how was it going to market with this idea and implementing, let's say, merchants at the time and still today, like easily accepted the idea, or there was some friction because you're gathering the data from people's faces?
There was definitely friction, all kinds of friction, even like conspiracy theory friction, you could imagine. We were just getting locked down, coming out of lockdowns a little bit, freedom. And we're trying to get people to pay with a face after so much craziness was going on. So it was challenging in every aspect of the go-to-market strategy. We lucked out because we obviously Startup Bootcamp was a huge help in defining our basics, fun business model canvas, like the why, the what, the how. Of course, our team is our team proper and all this stuff. So we tuned a lot of it in the accelerator program. And then we were grateful enough to be accepted at the end of 2020 in the Visa Innovation Program in Bulgaria. And we got accepted to work with Raiffeisen Bank, Bulgaria. At the end of 2020, we had a little more freedom. Things were opening up and we had time to actually go and put. And by this time, we had scaled up a lot of locations in Bucharest. We had like several coffee shops, salons, but the usage wasn't frequent because every month or so, everything would be locked down again and close the doors. And so we didn't have a lot of data, a lot of opportunity to test, really test and figure out what's going on.
Someone with a mask on that they had to take out the mask.
Yeah. So we built it so you could keep the mask on too. Of course, you lose a lot of reliability, but we made it. Of course, we didn't have a lot of volume, so it wasn't a big deal because the scale was very small. It was a soft launch, so the matching algorithm was okay at that time. It was like 97% accuracy, but the database was very small. There wasn't very many people using it, obviously. So it was okay, but we knew eventually this would go away. So it wasn't built for masks. It was just temporary to show that it could work too. But really, when we worked with Visa, that's when we really fine-tuned, you know, the incentives. What is our customer acquisition cost? How do we actually get people to pay? If they do pay, we buy them a cup of coffee and they try it. Like, how do they download? How do they onboard? And will they come back the next day and do it again? And we were surprised. Everyone was surprised that people actually loved it. And 80% of people that paid once would come back and pay again. And at that point, we knew we could probably scale this in a normal environment. And that's exactly what we did.
And now is it all over Bucharest and places in Europe, or how is the current market?
So it scaled 2021, 2022. We scaled up to 50 locations across Bucharest. We had the Bulgaria partnership going and still testing, doing a lot of experiments. Of course, we spent like the next 2 years building the UI and the UX and product development because we just basically launched a beta V1. So we had still a lot of product development to do before this was, you know, mainstream. It's not that easy to make it easy. And all the different edge cases, like, is someone behind you? Are you going to duck? Or how far are you? There was all kinds of edge cases that we had to isolate and fix and bugs. So it was very difficult. Like PayByFace is 12 million lines of code in the software.
Whoa.
Yeah. So it took us 7 years to build PayByFace. It's quite a challenging thing to turn a card into a face and then build an actual value platform ecosystem in this space.
Or was all bootstrapped?
In essence, it's bootstrapped. I pretty much did a lot of self-funding because we didn't want to burn through a bunch of money trying to figure out something that wasn't common and it wasn't going to happen anytime soon. So there was no point raising money because we would have just burned through it anyway. So we'd rather spend $1,000 than $100,000 and find the same result. We did have some angel investors. We probably initially raised close to about 100,000, but we ran on 100,000 for 3 years.
Whoa, that's pretty lean. And you also in Eastern Europe, so costs are way lower.
Yeah, we knew we're not going to get people to pay with their face like overnight. We knew this was going to be at least 5 to 7 years before people even know what PayByFace is.
What made you so passionate about this idea that you're even willing to live on sort of a budget and have, okay, I have this runway. I know people are not going to adopt it, but I truly believe in this idea.
We really have dedicated to building a unicorn, and that doesn't happen overnight. The odds are already very slim. So it really, the goal and the strategy was, how long can we survive? Because let's just say we're going to put a timetable on this of 15 years, just like Amazon, 13 years, NVIDIA, 40 years. We wanted to really go as far as possible. So it wasn't about making money. It wasn't about flipping it and saying, hey, look what I did. It was actually to change the way we pay permanently across the world. And so that was easy 10 to 15 years. So once we set that goal, it doesn't really matter at that point. We're going to do whatever it takes.
Yeah, fascinating. So you see in, let's say, 5-10 years, or what timeline for adoption start to occur that we can see?
Yeah. I think it's definitely going to be within 5-10 years. We already have 7 years behind us. And just in the last 7 years, this is going and it's not stopping. It's obvious. So Europe is just coming out with universal digital ID. UAE has already launched this. China, of course, Alipay, Tencent. This has already been common. Russia and metros. It's going to happen. There's no stopping it. But we knew this in Amsterdam. So now it's just really, like I said, it's longevity and waiting for the market to catch up. Of course, the whole COVID landscape change of COVID that impacted just payments in general across the world, and digital cash and mobile apps and mobile pay, tap to pay, and all the change that happened because of COVID was obvious stepping stone towards biometric payments and digital ID and digital currency and all this stuff. So all the signs were there. It's already, I think it's building up to critical mass.
Yeah, awesome. That's really amazing to hear. What do you feel that's the biggest barrier so far in this mass adoption? Is it users that don't want to get their face out, they don't feel comfortable, or just governments that don't allow this to happen? Or are you going to replace Visa and MasterCard with this?
Those are very good questions. Originally, PayByFace was designed to use open banking because, yeah, we wanted to basically build a better Visa, build a better MasterCard scheme network. And with open banking in Europe, it just makes sense to, your money's in the bank. Why don't we just pull from the bank and pay the merchant, which is also in the bank? So why do we need a Visa MasterCard scheme? And of course, I worked for a senior vice president of Visa. I worked with the chief architect of Visa. So we knew we wanted to build a better Visa from an architecture perspective, but that's harder done than said. And the problem, I don't think the problem is that people don't want to do it. We proved people will do it. And you use your phone, you use your face to open Face ID. You go through airports now with face recognition all over the place. So it's not that adoption or people are scared anymore. I think it's going to become commonplace to use biometrics in everyday life. We weren't afraid that people would be scared of this. At first, yeah, of course, there's always a barrier of entry and a few people are scared of this stuff. But really what's stopping the adoption from really going mainstream is just the lack of understanding on data security, data privacy, what is really the benefit of using your face when we all have cards. Like, there's not a problem. If it's not broken, don't fix it. And plus, investments worldwide at a global scale is still on NFC, tap to pay. We just got America out of writing checks just within my time, my lifelines. There's been a lot of pre-existing investments in finance worldwide, and even e-commerce has taken off in the last 10 years and 5 years. Like, so many different variables have to migrate in order to reach this common ground of accepted biometrics as a form of elevated security and payments. It's a very complicated long-term change that has to happen. And a lot of different components have to catch up for it to really be a solid state environment.
Yeah, great. You mentioned that there's still a knowledge barrier in terms of where the identity or the face gets stored. What would you like people to know about this part of the process? Is it encrypted and no one can ever access it? Is it just on the terminals, on the point of sale of each store? How does it work? How can I really trust that my face is not going to be leaked in the dark web and sold, let's say, like my email?
Of course, yeah. Basic is that there's no such thing as a photo on the network. We don't store photos. Like, it's not like your Facebook photo. So when you take a selfie and you register your face on the PayByFace network, I'm not saving a photo of your face. It obviously gets encrypted and turned into a non-readable format. And that's also just for scalability. There's no way I could store photos, a billion people. We need our own server farm. So there's a lot of architecture, proprietary architecture that, you know, based on performance engineering and scalability, that just makes sense. You're basically a number, a very cryptic number. And all the matching is done locally on the phones, phone hardware, because it's powerful enough to do the face recognition and stuff. But we have other things like liveliness, geofencing. You also have PIN, basically PIN on glass, and a lot of different mechanisms. So it's not just one factor authentication. It's actually five factor authentication. And once you understand it from a technical perspective, it makes a lot of sense. But really, it just for sort of the techies out there that are concerned about that. But for mass market adoption, it's not based on security. Like we all know our credit card sucks as far as security, but we still use it because it's the only thing to use. So it's really more, payments are built on really three things. One is convenience, speed, and then of course, security. But you need all three to have a paradigm shift. You can't base it just on security or just on speed or just on convenience. So we tried to tackle all three. And really the adoption of payments, to choose pay by face over your card, is convenience more than security.
Makes a lot of sense. One of the use cases that come to my mind, and I'd like to know your comment on this, is particularly in Europe and also in the US, there is a refugee or migrant crisis. Do you think this could be a way that we can bank the unbanked with sort of a wallet by their face when they have no bank account, they have no social security number, and maybe even the government wants to give them an X amount of money for basic needs and go to a supermarket? This make things more even and fair?
Absolutely, I think. Yeah. We actually designed a system for India. I've been to India 9 times, and we designed it so that basically a guy selling coconuts in Mumbai use his Android phone and take payments with people's faces. And then we even tried this in South Africa, but there's on phone numbers basically on your SIM chip, but you use that as a banking account. We tried different variations, but we really didn't want to have that as our core product offering. We're not really trying to solve the unbanked space. We can definitely use this in that way, like meal cards, expense tracking, and government digital ID for benefits, things like that. We even built a version for blind people. We worked with EY to come up with a way to have people with disabilities for them to pay, because it's really hard for a blind person to figure out if it's a MasterCard or Visa. So it was a much easier for them just to hold their phone up and pay.
You talked about that, and it's a real problem.
The gentleman that was in our test lab literally broke down in tears when we told him, you just paid, and he just started crying in front of us.
Can't imagine what someone like going through that feels, right?
There's so many use cases. It's unbelievable.
Since you mentioned Seattle earlier, I have seen a lot of these Amazon stores where you go in and out and you just hold your shopping cart and everything is paid. Are they also using this technology?
I think they're using Palm, from what I've been aware of. I'm not really sure how their tech works. We chose face recognition. There's lots of other, there's eye, there's voice, several different ways biometrics can, you know, different mechanisms in biometrics that can be used. But we chose face just because it's your face. There's a personality behind it. And everything on social media is about your face and your public appearance and your personality and your character and stuff like that. So we just chose face just because we think it's better from an experience.
Is there a place where I can go today and try this technology that you recommend?
So you can actually, the apps are all available on Android and iOS. Just search pay by face, all one word. And you can download the app, sign up. We have it available, I believe, in over 30 countries. But part of the story is that we didn't really want this to be everywhere, because we still have a lot of work to do. We wrote 12 million lines of code and it works amazing. And we know it'll work, but there's still some challenges. in how we're going to scale this up from a business perspective. We chose SaaS and then possibly even transactional. But really, we're not a payment service provider. We didn't reinvent payments. I didn't build a payment system. I just changed the experience layer and took payments beyond the transaction. I basically made payments fun, but I didn't reinvent the way we pay. And we leverage existing payment gateways. Like we integrated into a payment gate, just a regular PSP e-commerce gateway. And we leverage all the existing certified tokenization online. It's basically an online payment when you pay by face. So from a fiscal perspective in different countries, there's a challenge in issuing receipts when you're doing e-commerce. And so there's still some challenges in that regard. And so we're still trying to figure out our business, our real scalable business model. Like I said, 15 years, we're like halfway there. We still have some work to do on figuring out how we're just going to get this to go be at HEB and at Starbucks and at McDonald's and at KFC, but we are this close.
Well, fascinating. I can't wait to see in a couple of years where you are in the update with Pay by Face.
You will have it. I promise you. Get the app and download it because it's coming.
For sure. Where is the best place if you want people to follow on and keep up with the updates?
We have our Instagram page at Pay by Face, on TikTok, YouTube, my own personal channel on YouTube. I've been publishing videos on there. But really, I post most of the real good stuff on my LinkedIn page. So I have like over 30,000 followers on LinkedIn. Ever since I came to Bucharest and started this thing, I've been all over the place and people are just fascinated by this story and watching us. Follow me on LinkedIn or just keep an eye out on our Instagram and TikTok because it's quite exciting.
How can we find you on LinkedIn? Is it your first and last name?
Yeah, my first and last name, Mihai Dragici.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks for tuning in to the Chain Stories podcast, where disruptors become trailblazers. Don't forget to subscribe to hear more inspiring stories from those who are pushing boundaries in digital assets. Brought to you by Dropout Capital, where bold vision transforms into reality. Check out our social media links down below and visit us online at dropout.capital. And remember, the future belongs to those who dare to challenge the norm.